The Loose Cannons podcast is a free-form discussion about film that contains mature language,
such as poop and titty,
and descriptions of mature situations,
such as filing taxes and raising children.
We do not have any concern for spoilers, so if you haven't seen the film or films we are discussing and don't want to have the twists ruined for you, please watch the film before listening to the podcast.
しかし誰も言い伝えうる人はなく、おそらくは山の魔人の伝説に置き換えられる日まで人々はその魂に黙して語らんである。
Hello everyone, another Loose Cannons podcast coming at you. Today we're going to be discussing 1963's Legend of a Duel to the Death, or was it? It might have also been called A Legend, or was it? Depending on...
Or Chito no Densetsu, if you're Japanese.
Well, it was definitely called that, there's no question.
Yeah.
Directed by Keisuke Kinoshita. But before we discuss that, let's discuss this, a little segment we like to call Heralds and Announcements. Boop, 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 boop. Patrick?
Yeah. I don't have anything to herald. I don't have anything to herald or denounce.
It's been a neutral kind of year for...
It's been a bad few weeks
since I watched a good movie.
Yeah. For my movie watching in general, I just haven't gotten out much.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't have anything to herald or denounce. Sorry, guys.
No problem.
I could herald or denounce something. Depending on how people feel. I guess I'll go ahead and denounce something that was previously heralded and say that I saw Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice, and I was not a fan of that movie. There are certain parts that I thought were really cool in the beginning and in the end, but I didn't like almost anything that happened in the middle, and I really hated the editing from almost all of it. There's like a scene where Batman's like chasing a bunch of villains in his Batmobile and shooting them. And I was like, what is happening in this scene? Like, I couldn't connect. Like, every time it cut to the next shot, I was like, why this shot? Like, what am I looking at? Like, I have no idea what's going on. And then the scene was over and I was like, I guess Batman won. Maybe. I don't know. Like, I couldn't make... And I felt that way about almost all the action scenes. I was just like, why did it go from this shot to this shot? I can't make any, like, logical or, like... Like, sometimes the camera would be moving right to left, and then it would cut to a shot where the camera's, like, moving down instead. And I was like, that makes no logical sense to, like, how brains process information. Felt, like, jagged in a way that I couldn't understand. And... I don't know. As Ruben mentioned in his review, a lot of the dialogue's really terrible, which is unfortunate. And David Goyer is a really bad writer.
Sure is.
And what I actually just wanted from the movie was like a Batman movie. I feel like Zack Snyder's take on Batman is really gross. Like, Ben Affleck looks disgusting in that suit. He was like, he's sort of, I mean, he's, like, obviously older, and he's, like, unshaven all the time, and he doesn't have, like, the Batman jawline of, like, a really hard jaw. He's, like, kind of like a mushy cheek look, and I was just like, he just looks gross every time you see him, and he's, like, sort of, like, hunched over, and the suit's just, like, this weird brown color, and I was like, I want this, like, gross Batman who's, like, talking about how the only way... the world makes any sense as if you force it to. I was like, well, this guy's pretty awful. Mm-hmm. I thought that was cool, but they don't really give him anything to do, because then he's like stuck with Wonder Woman and Superman, and they all have like sort of stories, but none of them really connect to each other. I don't know.
I was glad that they didn't dwell too much on the origin stuff, though. Like,
oh, sure.
I always get really bored with that stuff. I did like Batman as like PTSD sufferer, though.
Post-traumatic Batman.
Yeah, that was kind of his thing throughout the whole movie. Yeah. Like everything went back to, you know, all of his stuff as a child, and it was just like, oh, that's why he's, you know, angry at Superman, because he's not really angry. Whoa!
Nice.
Whoa!
I forgot I set that. My laundry is done.
Good, holy good ringtone, thing. Batman.
Good things.
Sorry, listeners.
Oh, man, I need to do laundry, too.
My laundry is ready.
I'd like to denounce doing laundry.
Yeah.
Ugh. I have to go to a laundromat to do it, too. That sucks.
Mm. Yeah, laundromats are the worst. You could read some Yeats, though. Like, Spider-Man, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I like laundromats.
Say you could meet Shannon Sossaman there and then engage in 40 days and 40 nights of no sexual contact.
Mm. Yeah, I was thinking more like the end of Tangerine. Like ever since then.
In depressed silence.
Yes. ever since then. Like,
I would hope I would not get pee thrown on me on the way there.
No. Well, if you do, you want a friend to be there with you.
It's true. I do wish I had a friend to sit with me.
Yeah. I also don't really have anything to herald or denounce, by the way. I watched 10 Cloverfield Lane, and it was fine. Like, if this makes my top 10, that's not a great year. So, but I didn't hate it, mostly was pretty on board with it. So, yeah, John Goodman is pretty great in it, for sure. The girl that is also in Scott Pilgrim, I forget her name right now, but she's decent in it as well. And
Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Yeah, thought especially all the stuff having to do with her just being terrified of being in that situation was pretty spot on. And she acted really that part really, really well. So, for what it's worth.
Mild herald.
Mild herald, I guess, yeah.
I'm in the same boat as Patrick. I saw two films, and I gave them middle-of-the-road ratings, including Batman vs. Superman, so I will neither herald nor denounce it.
Nice.
I will herald the first two-thirds of Jesse Eisenberg's performance in it and denounce the last third. Because through most of the movie, I was like, cool, this is my first acting nominee of the year. I really like Jesse Eisenberg as Lex Luthor, and then at the end I was like, now he's just straight up crazy and I hate it.
Okay. Yeah, I guess it's been a common sentiment, but my coworker told me after I saw it, he was like, oh yeah, it seemed like Zack Snyder wanted to make a Batman movie so badly he just turned Lex Luthor into the Joker at the end of it.
Which I think is kind of interesting, but I don't think he did that, honestly.
Yeah.
Would have been a more interesting idea if he had done that, though.
Like, literally turned him into the Joker?
I'd have been like, whoa! Whoa! This went in a different direction.
Did you like how all three of the men had dead fathers that were huge effects on their life?
It's true. I really like his monologue about that, where he's just like, yeah, my dad was a jerk, that's why I'm this way.
It would have been cool if they just brought in Jack Nicholson as the Joker. Hey guys.
I thought you were going to say as Lex Luthor's father.
Who is the Joker? Yeah. Boom. Big reveal.
Oh my god.
I thought you were dead.
I still haven't watched that movie, but I'm now mildly curious to do it, just because...
It's very divisive.
Yeah.
We've got all three takes covered, so I don't know what you can add.
Yeah, I know, yeah. I know, totally.
Maybe you could say it's canonical. I guess that would be even more extreme than...
Yeah. Or I'll just have nothing to say on it like I do now. That would be the other extreme.
Or you could be like directly in the middle, and then it's even more balanced. We have one person on one side, one person on the other, and then... Two people holding down the middle.
Correct.
Just all over the place on this movie.
Yeah.
All right.
Speaking of movie.
Yep.
Speaking of PTSD. Patrick?
Oh, are we? Okay, we're ready.
We are.
So this film is about... mostly about the Sonobe family who lives in the hills in Japan. It's set during World War II, or like the very end of World War II. And Japan is losing the war, and it's kind of having an effect on the citizens. The Sonobe's sons return from war, along with Goichi Takamori, who is the son of the, I guess, like the mayor of the town. And... while they're returning, the son Hideyuki Sonobe runs into Goichi, and Goichi recognizes him, and he's like, "Oh yeah, I was in your unit at that one time." And he doesn't really say what it is, but we get to see a flashback, and it's sort of Goichi kind of like committing these war atrocities, and so he sort of knows his dark secret, and that kind of sets Goichi off. He knows about his secrets, and then Goichi wants to marry the Sonobe's oldest daughter, and she rejects him. And so he kind of goes crazy, and it's implied, although we don't see it, that he destroys their field one night and then starts spreading rumors that the family is destroying other people's fields in the town and kind of turns the town against them. And... basically sets up this whole scenario where I don't know if you would call it like a, I don't know if it would be the same, but kind of like a Hatfields and McCoys type thing, where it's like you've got the townspeople and just the members of this family. Like, it doesn't matter who in the family, like anytime they see them, something horrible is going to happen. And basically at the end of the movie, we get kind of a big shootout. A lot of people die. And it's kind of horrible and tragic.
Yeah.
Yep. So that is the film.
I thought this movie was all right. I was pretty on board for most of it. I like the music a lot, the way it switches between like really intense orchestral music and this like kind of twangy, almost Western theme. And some of the cinematography I thought was pretty cool, but like once it gets to the big sort of tragic melodramatic showdown, like I didn't really feel like the emotions that had built up over this pretty short movie really landed for me. So I was like, well, this is basically what I saw coming, but I don't feel super one way or the other about it. Felt a little nonplussed, and yeah, so it sort of just like went from me being like, oh yeah, this movie's pretty good, to me being like, yeah, it's all right.
Yeah, I didn't really like it. It felt like a really on the nose sort of morality play. I hated the voiceover. I thought like that whole thing was really like weird. I really disliked a lot of the characters in it, especially the like, I guess, slightly mentally off person who's like, who gets shot in that one sequence.
The drunk guy.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it was like, I felt like a lot of it was like, but the evil guys are like super evil. Especially the mayor's son was just like a really basically just caricature of, things. I think it was like trying to, or I'm pretty sure it was alluding to like Japanese war crimes and stuff like that, and maybe how that came to happen. But I felt like, I don't know, like it didn't really land for me the way maybe it would have if I maybe also known a little bit more about Japanese culture and stuff like that. But since I don't, didn't really like it.
I liked it. Mostly the music.
Music was good.
I agree. I wasn't super emotionally invested in it, but I did think that it was pretty, and I thought the music was really, really good.
I also liked it. I was on the path to liking it a lot more before the like last third of the movie. I feel like it kind of switches modes, and it almost feels like they ran out of money or something during the last third, because it just, the way that they edit the like shootouts and stuff like that felt really, I don't know, it felt really like jarring, and it didn't flow together well. And it, for the type of movie that this was, where it was kind of trying to build, you know, this really like emotional, dramatic story, the editing felt like it was out of a different movie that wanted to like, I can't think of the word that I'm trying to use for it right now, but it wanted to like abstract the action a little bit. And I didn't feel like that fit with the type of movie they were making, because there would be shots where it would be somebody about to shoot a gun, and then it would cut to like a shot of the forest, and you would like hear the gun far off. And it was just like, but this is like, I want to be in the moment with these people right now, because you built up all this emotion, and you know, I can't connect if I'm not seeing what's happening. And it just felt like, oh, we don't have like squibs to put on people for them to get shot or whatever. And so I was missing that, because this movie felt a lot like a Western, is what it felt like. Like the music and the setting.
I mean, the beginning is absolutely.
It's people like working in the fields and, you know, just doing kind of like everyday town life stuff. And I also thought
the horns are like a call to like the cowboys to assemble.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And I also like really loved the color sequences. I thought they were just gorgeous, but I was kind of disappointed that it went to black and white for most of the movie. But I guess it was like doing this is the present, this is the past type thing. But again, it just felt like they didn't have money to, you know, buy color stock for the film.
Mm. Yeah, I think that, I mean, actually, I'm pretty sure that him shooting it in black and white was like a somewhat subversive thing to do at that point. Like if you've seen, I mean, like Cruel Story of Youth and movies like in that era, like Japan was very quick to adopt both scope and color in the beginning, like late 50s, early 60s. So like some studios refused to shoot anything not in color. Like there was like, we don't do that anymore. Black and white's for old people. Like we're doing color only right now. So like him starting in color and then going back to black and white, I think is like a very intentional sort of, well, like a metaphorical move of being like, see how pretty this is, see how great it looks, like isn't it serene and everyone's helping each other, except it's all built on a lie of a bunch of people murdering each other and then refusing to talk about it forever.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Very allegorical.
Kind of cool, but yeah, I mean, Kinoshita's not really an action director in general, so it could be that he just, like, you know, either isn't interested in or didn't really want to apply the kind of, like,
I don't know,
regular action directing.
Yeah, editing. I kind of felt like I wish it had gone either one way or the other. Like, it had actually gone with, like, super abstracting all the action like that, or it had gone super emotional with it. It kind of, like, straddled the line a little bit, and I was like, I don't really know which way to go on this. It kind of lost me during that part, too.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think that it could have been handled differently slash better. I was more like providing a reason than like offering it as like, ha, you can't dislike it. Yeah. It's not his fault. He's just not an action director. Boom.
Yeah.
I think this is a film, we really say this on Loose Cannons, so definitely could have used more length. Like, mm-hmm. I think it being 83 minutes is actually not to its benefit with the story that it wanted to tell.
The part that got me like the most in what you're talking about there, Ruben, was the part where it shows the villagers like running to the house to, you know, arrest them or probably kill them, and it was like the voiceover comes in and is like, all of the built up tension from all the years of oppression was like running through their veins or something like that. And I was like, you should have shown me this. Like, you can't just tell me this in a voiceover as it's happening. Like, you have to show me how it's built up in these people. Like, we don't know anything about these villagers except, you know, just seeing them yelling at people the whole time. So there's really like no investing in, you know, that rage that they supposedly have. And I wish that we would have gotten to see that. I wish there had been some scenes between the family members and the townspeople before, you know, the guy had spread the rumors and like made everybody hate them and all that.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of what he's alluding to is just like the cultural resentment because they've been fighting this war for so long and losing it so badly over the last couple of years. But like, yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, agree that it's sort of just like stated instead of like, because none of the characters are really characters, they're all just sort of archetypes, so
yeah. And that's, I mean, yeah, I understood what he was saying. Like, I understood it was like, oh yeah, the Japanese people are just like, they're all angry, because I mean, they do get like one or two scenes of people being like, oh, my son is dead or whatever, but I mean, it's not nearly enough, you know. It's, that's just like, that's lip service to like real pain. You don't, you know, that's always the rule in movies too, is to show, don't tell. And so, you know, you're supposed
to rule
like,
in all art.
Well, I suppose so.
Except for Tom Anderson.
But he does show you stuff though. He shows you movies.
I was going to say not essays and not journalism, and he makes video essays. So
Yeah.
In essays, it's definitely tell, don't show. People don't want those abstract essays.
Yeah. A log.
A stream of consciousness.
Yeah. A log. On the riverbank. The salmon in the stream. What is this about? It's about the war!
I thought this director was very good at shooting horses and people on horses.
Yeah. I like the part when the son like comes back and then the guy gives him his horse and he's like riding it, and he's riding it pretty awkwardly. He doesn't look like a professional horse rider the way you're used to seeing people in westerns. He's kind of like walking back and forth, clearly in a hurry. That's cool.
Yeah, the cows in the beginning reminded me of Too Early, Too Late. Just because it's cows on a road.
Cows plus the music at the beginning reminded me of The Magnificent Seven.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. I was like, oh yeah, we got a Western here. Cool. And I like the scene where...
So this was pre-Morricone, right? I assume. When was this movie?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. 1963. 63, so when was...
Because of
I mean, it was definitely...
He was because making movies at that time, but not... He hadn't made, like...
He was making Italian movies.
Dollars or anything.
Yeah.
Like, because the music is obviously, like, very reminiscent of stuff that he would do.
Yeah.
Like, that sort
definitely, even if he had started doing stuff like this, like, proliferation of those movies, like... internationally did not exist yet, so
yeah, for sure.
I wonder if he like was influenced by this in any way, because it's just like, you know, not a lot of movies had that sort of mouth.
Fistful of Dollars was 1964.
Yeah, 2 years later,
8 years later,
right. So
but plausible. I feel like the way that distribution works, it would be pretty crazy if Sergio Leone or Ennio Morricone had seen this movie. Like, it's not like a very famous Kinoshita movie, even though he's a pretty famous director. Like, even Fistful of Dollars, people didn't in the U.S. didn't see until after Good, the Bad, and the Ugly came out. Like, it was in Italy and stuff like that, but it didn't get U.S. distribution until Good, the Bad, and the Ugly was a big hit.
I was going to say the scene where Takamori, what's his name? Goichi Takamori, the kind of villain of the film, I guess, is chasing Keiko through the forest. On like he's on the horse and she's on foot, or she's like, you know, kind of like trying to run away from him. There's a few shots in that where you can actually like see the I don't know, it's like the bend of the lens they're using. So they're using like a almost like a fisheye, so you can see like the way that the shot kind of like bends as they go along with the horse. And I was like, whoa, this looks trippy, because it's like kind of almost in the middle. You can see like this point where it kind of changes and folds a little bit, and so it's like this crazy wide shot. And I was like, that looks really cool, actually. Even though it looks like maybe they're like stretching it to the technical limitation of it.
Sure.
Like, it still looks pretty cool the way that it captures the whole
forest. I like
that
scene a lot, and I especially like the moment after that scene when the dad asks the woman if she's all right, and she just screams in response. I thought that was a nice moment to be like, yeah, like, she survived the attack, and, like, he wasn't able to rape her or anything because she was saved by her sister, I guess.
Right. Yuri,
but, like, it didn't, like, change the fact that, you know, it was awful.
Right.
Yeah. I think Yuri's actually not her sister. She just, she's the girl that grew up with her, with the family. So it's like her father and her are like the caretakers for the family.
Yeah. But it's actually not like Yuri's the one who is saved, right? It's
no,
sister who
no.
hits him with the rock.
Kiko.
No.
Kiko is the one that's saved. Kiko's
Yuri's
the
one who hits the guy with the stone.
Yuri is Mariko Kaga.
It's his ex-fiance who decides not to marry him when she finds out that he's a horrible person.
Yeah.
I just am misremembering the scene because...
Yeah, it's... I mean,
when it starts out, he's chasing Yuri, or is he chasing...
He's chasing Keiko.
Yeah. They're, exactly. Like, going up into the mountain to, like, I don't know, get something, and then it's like... A storm is coming, and the brother's like, you should go home. And so she starts walking back, and then she runs into Muto Sugawara, who's the...
Yeah, the...
Place, the
Inspector...
Ex-fiance.
Inspector Yamashita from Man Who Stole the Sun.
Yeah, I was gonna say, it's too bad we never made that database of every, like, person who worked on / is in all the films that we discuss. Because then we could ask, is this the second time that we've...
Yeah.
Is this the second actor who's been in two of our films after Cary Grant?
Well, but Jennifer Lawrence has been in a bunch at this point.
Oh, that's true.
All right. Yeah, everyone in Hunger Games?
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, it's the sister Keiko is the one that he's chasing. And then Yuri is the one who comes up and hits him in the back of the head with a rock. I also kind of liked, but I found it, I guess, kind of truthful, like the head trauma in this movie. Because it was like, people would get hit with stuff, and they would like, they would keep going for a little bit, and then they would just fall over. And I was just like, ugh, that's such a, like, you can just feel like the pain on their bodies when they do it, because the way that they move, they're just like, you know, like stumbling around, like you can almost feel like their head feels like it's on fire when that's happening, and it's awful.
Head injuries are taken very seriously in this movie. That's true.
Yeah,
as opposed to almost every movie ever.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when the little brother gets hit over the head with that stick, and he just like gets up and just like walks a few steps and then just like falls face down on the ground, I was like, ugh, ow. You just like feel his head swimming.
Yeah.
As he gets, when he gets hit. And those are pretty horrible. Like, I don't know, the part where the older brother finally makes it back to the town and he goes, he's like, where's my brother? And they just like point in the other room. Like, they're not, they don't even like acknowledge that he's dead. They just like point and he goes in and he's dead. And I was just like, oh, that's horrible. Like, people aren't even reacting to this. They're treating it like it's just like the most annoying thing in the world for them. They're just like, oh, you guys are causing a disturbance. It's like my family members are being murdered. Excuse me.
Those villagers sure did hate those evacuees.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
I also kind of like the scene where Yuri and the older brother, who's, I'm going to remember his name one of these days, Hideyuki, that's his name, where he's leaving to go talk to his friends about getting a new house for his family so they can move out of the village. And she like screams at him. She's like, I hope you get caught in an air raid and die. And I was like, that's a horrible thing to say. Like, air raids are really horrible and like nightmarish things where people get burned alive. And then she like walks it back by saying, if you get caught in an air raid, I hope you don't die. So it's like, either way, you're just like hoping for him to get caught in an air raid. It's just so horrible.
She said a very Twitterish thing, in my opinion. I can't remember exactly what the quote was, but it was like, living is very boring.
Oh, yeah. I wrote that down. Where's my phone? I wrote it down on my phone because it was so funny. I remember that.
Yeah, I remember that.
It was like, living is very boring. I hope I die.
Yeah. What does she say?
She's not wrong.
Yeah, she says, I'll be dead before then. It's boring to stay alive.
Yeah.
Stay alive, yeah. That's good.
He says, I'll be back soon. And she's like, I'll be dead by then. It's boring to stay alive. That's so funny. I also thought,
Twitter girl.
Yeah.
And also very true, unfortunately.
Every time
he does get back, she's dead.
That is sad. Yes. Very sad. I was also going to say this.
She died in the most boring way, being shot to death.
Bullets, my only weakness.
What's my weakness, guys?
There are some songs in this movie that I thought were really like, I guess they were supposed to be ironic, but it was kind of crazy that they were all being sung by children. So there were some where it was like, when the soldiers rode into town, they were singing a song that was like, I'm coming home victorious. And it's like, no, they're coming home because they're losing, because they're about to lose the war. And then there was another one where they were singing about the dead soldiers, and the lyrics were something like, go across the sea to be corpses. And it's like, oh God, this is a song that they teach children.
All children's songs are like that.
Yeah, kids love really morbid,
morbid really propaganda.
Morbid and horrible songs about becoming corpses. Yeah, I guess Ring Around the Rosie is about dying too, isn't it?
Sure is.
Dying by plague.
Wonderful. Pretty sure there's a children's rhyme about Lizzie Borden.
Whoa.
Oh, children. I'm gonna look through my notes here.
I guess it's pretty cool that the female characters get as much play as they do.
That's true.
They're, and that early in the film they discuss like how stupid marriage is. When it's like, do you really want to marry this guy? And she's like, oh, if I marry him, like, my family will live instead of starving to death. So that part's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Like, is that a reason to bury someone? It's like, well, we don't want to starve, so.
Yeah, the first note I wrote down was John Ford? Question mark. So I was like, this looks so much like a John Ford movie.
Yawn time.
Yeah.
I think I've discussed all of my notes already.
Well, it's a short movie, so it makes sense to have a short podcast about it. The
cops. They're not good.
Yeah. I like when the mayor calls the stun dumb. He's running away. His dumb son.
This is the first movie I've seen where that actor, Bunta Sugawara, is 100% a villain. He's usually like an anti-hero of sorts.
I can see that.
Isn't he the one from Street Mobster?
Maybe. He's in a lot of Fukasuku films.
Yeah, I was gonna say
he's the protagonist of Battles Without Honor and Humanity.
Yeah, yeah. He's got that very like square jaw.
He should have been Batman.
Yeah. Bunta Sugawara as Batman.
Yeah, it totally is him.
Oh man.
No, he died a couple years ago.
Oh.
So
yeah.
He could have been Batman until very recently.
Could have been the Nolan Batman. Yep, so.
I like when she says that you're a devil, and he's like, okay, this is what a devil does. And then attacks her.
Mm.
No rationalizing there.
Yeah.
He's not like, you owe me or whatever. We were supposed to be wed. He's like, no, you're right. I am awful. Here I go.
he knows at that point. He's just like, yeah, I committed war crimes. So what?
Yeah.
I lost my hand.
Mob. Cool slow dolly end shot. And the family finds out what's going on. That the police are coming.
Oh, yeah, all the shots when the grandmother gets killed and then their house is on fire were really sad and beautiful.
Yeah, I didn't... Again, that was another scene where I was like... The part where the house is on fire looks cool, but like I didn't like the editing in the part where the grandmother gets shot because it was just like... I don't know, the way that they... I felt like they could have framed that better somehow. No. Again, it was that, like, the editing was a little too choppy there.
Well, what I liked was that, like, no one looks cool when killing people in this movie. Like, there's very little shots of, like, you know, someone, like, with a gun shooting someone and someone falls to the ground and they, like, hover over them with a gun or some shit like that. Like, it's mostly people, like, die or whatever, and then like they fall on the ground, then there's a shot of a tree or whatever. Like there's very few lingering shots of like violence and people committing violence while like, you know, looking like people do in westerns or whatever, which is why I actually sort of was on board with some of the editing also in the end, especially when it gets to that shootout at the end. Sometimes it just like cuts to some like shot of nature, and then there's like a shot, and then you don't even know who's shooting at who exactly right now. So it's like, you know, it's something that like Oliver Stone later prided himself on. Like he invented like shooting war scenes like he didn't really know what was going on. I felt like this movie kind of does that pretty obviously. And it does it pretty well. So I was okay with the editing in that scene as well.
Yeah, I was kind
of two differing takes.
I was okay with the fact that anytime someone shoots someone, they always sort of like immediately back off, or anytime somebody gets like injured or killed, they're almost immediately like backing off, kind of like horrified by what they've done in a way. Except for when Yuri hits the guy over the head with the rock. That part I felt like she was all like in the moment and like just worried about getting Kiko away from him. But any other time, like when the younger brother gets hit over the head with the stick, like everybody just kind of stops and is just like, what did we do? And then later when the grandma and the drunk guy get shot, everybody's just like, and then they just immediately like run away. And then, you know, later when the Yuri and her father get shot on the road, everybody just kind of stops. Like there's no more shooting after that. Everybody's like done with shooting. At that point, they're like, oh man, we killed these people. We've done something horrible. Like we immediately regret all that shit that we just went through. So I did think that was kind of a interesting element where they were making the characters immediately regret their violence, which I don't think you see in a lot of movies.
It's true. There's the part where she yells at them. She's like,
"Are you? Yeah.
A few days ago, we were just farming fields together. Now we're shooting each other.
Yeah.
Don't you have a conscience?
Yeah. Aren't you human? Yeah.
Yeah."
Differing takes.
That's gonna be like our theme song now.
It's whenever we disagree, segment. We should play that song.
Is this an episode of Differing Takes?
Differing Takes.
We'll have to come up with some kind of game spot. Anytime we play the Differing Takes song, then the two people have to play some game, and whoever wins, their opinion is the right one.
Oh my god.
Their opinion is then the only valid opinion. Yep. I like that game.
And the other three of us have to then agree with their take.
Yeah. And you have to sound convincing. Yep. Like, oh man, you're I'm really... Right. Really turning me around on this.
Oh my god.
Batman v Superman.
Yeah, who wants to play me for Batman v Superman?
Best movie ever.
Top 10 of the year. Yeah. Unless this is a significantly better year than last year, it's not going to be in my bottom 10 or anything.
Yeah.
If I had seen this last year, I still would have seen 30 movies I liked less, probably.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping I see enough movies that it won't end up in my top 10. But right now, it's number one.
Nice.
On the list. Just ahead of Anomalisa, so. I haven't seen a lot of great movies this year.
Yeah, you saw Anomalisa, like, at the very beginning of the year.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess that's true of me. I've only got two movies that I would be semi-okay with being on my top 10. One of them almost certainly will be, but I hope it's not my number one. That'd be sad.
Oh.
Well... I suppose that's a lengthy enough pause that we can all agree to wrap this up.
It's an episode of Total Silence.
Yep. You thought we had anything else to say.
Thanks for listening to the podcast, everyone. I hope you're enjoying it. If you are doing so, you should subscribe using your podcast listening application and give us a 5-star rating and review on the old iTunes box machine. And boop, then boop, doop, boop, after boop. That, you know, join us on loosecannons.net, LOOSECANONS.net for not only all of our content, but our discussion board, where you can interact with four real-life celebrities, us.
Yeah, big shots.
And you can see us look like we're talking to ourselves, basically, in this comments section, because unfortunately Paul Wood and the other dude like deleted all their comments.
Abel Morales.
Yeah.
Where did you go?
Yeah. What happened Abel there? Did they just delete their accounts or what?
Yep.
Who knows?
We don't know what happened.
We might never know. Unless they show up again.
One of Earth's mysteries.
It's too bad.
Yeah, none of my movies so far would make my even honorable mentions that I've seen from 2016.
Boy, it's that kind of year already.
Step up the game.
Yeah, well, I mean, I mostly last seen
year was an
shorts.
Extremely good year, I think, and the year before that.
This year better be good, considering how many of my favorite directors are releasing movies this year.
That's true. Manchester by the Sea.
Yep. And I can't remember the name, but the new Kelly Reichardt film I'm excited about.
That's true.
And the other Kristen Stewart film, Reichardt. Personal Shopper. Yeah. I'm excited about.
Asaeus.
And don't forget.
Oh, is that Asaeus? Oh, that's awesome.
And don't forget God's Not Dead 2 or 3 or whatever the fuck. It's definitely coming out this year as well.
It already is out. It's kind of a bomb.
Yeah, people don't like it.
Miracles.
People don't like it.
I think they were confused because Sabrina the Teenage Witch is the star, and Christian people don't like witchcraft.
Nice. I could see how that would be confusing. Yeah.
Her past paganism against her.
Nice.
I think it's like, don't like
having Hercules be the star of the first one.
What other pagan former TV stars can Christians get?
Anyone from Buffy.
That's true. Maybe Amber Benson will be in the next three. Claire Kramer was on Doug Loves Movies a couple of weeks ago. She's really good again.
Yep.
Who's Claire Kramer again?
Episode, but she's always good on that show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she hadn't been on since she won all those episodes.
Who's Claire Kramer?
She plays Glory. Yeah.
Who?
Glory.
Oh, right. Yeah. Remember now.
Star of Big Ass Spider.
Big ass spider?
A big ass spider.
Is that where you... Is the emphasis on big ass spider?
I was going to say...
I don't know. I haven't seen it yet.
Is it on ass? Is it about a spider that attacks people's ass?
Yes.
Nope. Spider with a big ass.
The ass spider! Nope. You've got ass spiders, bro. That's the
just
big
lays
ass
an egg in
spider.
Your butt and then... Lots of tiny little spiders come crawling out of your bubble.
Yeah, it's the sequel to Arachnophobia.
That does sound like the worst thing ever.
Big ass spiders.
Big ass spiders.
She was also on Bring It On.
She sure is.
Nice.
Yeah, Doug Benson's doing a new game that's pretty fun, which is like the What Are They Known For game, where you look up a character, person on IMDb, and then... try to guess the four movies that they're known for.
That's fun.
Or sometimes they do the opposite, where he'll read one movie and then read the second movie, and people try and chime in and figure out what the actor is.
Yeah.
And then if they get it right, they get to try and guess what the other ones are. Claire Kramer is known for Bring It On and Big Ass Spider. And then two really random stuff.
Big Ass Spider is no longer listed on her known for.
How sad. What is it now?
Film Pigs. Bring It On, The Rules of Attraction, and The Skulls 3.
Oh, yeah, The Skulls 3. That was one of them.
Skulls nice. 3. Oh, my God.
I've never seen The Skulls 3, obviously. So I don't know how big her role is in that, but she's only in, like, one scene in Rules of Attraction, so yeah. It makes me sad that she's known for that. Like, also, the kid from Rookie of the Year / American Pie, like, hits on her or something, and that's it. That's her
nice.
Only thing in that movie.
I know Doug Benson's, like, one of the four things he's known for is, like, a promotional video for, like, Bridgetown Comedy Festival, which is, like, the Portland Comedy Festival that he hasn't even been to in the last, like, 4 years.
Nice.
Yeah. Thought he was mostly known for,
Super High Me?
Yeah, for the Michael Jackson movie.
For Captain EO.
Captain,
that would be pretty awesome.
Captain EO.
Known for
Blade Runner, that he was apparently in.
Yeah, Film Pigs is a TV series that Claire Kramer is the executive producer of.
What?
Oh, yeah, she created that, yeah.
Film Pigs.
Mm-hmm.
Just like famous movie pigs?
Yep.
Like the guy who played in Babe.
Gordo.
The 26 pigs that played Babe.
Charlotte's Web.
That pig from Black Cat, White Cat. It was pretty cool.
That's true. Well,
starts eating the car. Best movie pig ever.
I'm with you.
Are we still recording?
Right. See y'all next time.
we're just all over this podcast. Just all over it.
Bye.
Look out, guys.
Bye.
I just want to say a really personal and sincere apology to everyone out there.